Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of America's Conservative Podcast. I am your host, Ed Denzel. It's a little chilly here in Madeira Beach. In fact, I will tell you that I think, if you remember going back to January and February, I've told you that we've had a relatively mild winter here, to the point where it hasn't even come close that I've had to have turned on the heater in my apartment, and I have one of those electric, it's into the ceiling, it's like an electric current that radiates heat. That's all you really need in Florida. You don't need a real furnace, truthfully, at least not for a place my size. Usually they put them in the floor of the building. Mine has it in the ceiling, which seems to me to be a little less efficient because heat rises. But I've not had to turn it on, and I think this is the first winter that I haven't had to do that. But the last 24 hours, 36 hours, has definitely been the coldest it's been this winter, and it's in March. And you can feel when you go outside the wind blowing from the north. You can look at the Weather Channel or whatever, see that air is coming down from the north, and the wind has really been strong from that direction. And so it's been a little chilly, but I still not turned my heater on, but it's just on the edge of it. Almost did it last night. I know I'm really rubbing it in for all of you people who are down there at 30, 20, and 10 degrees. Sorry. Florida's a beautiful state. That's why people move here. So there's that. But today I'm looking out there. It's another beautiful day, not a cloud in the sky. Little bit of a breeze. So I'm guessing that it's going to start getting warmer again. I don't think it's going to get into the 70s today. In fact, I see a couple people walking out there and they have jackets on. But I think by this weekend it'll be back into the low 70s. You know, it's so hard being here. In addition, today starts the official beginning of March Madness. Not filled out a bracket, not going to watch any basketball games, don't care, bring on the baseball. I used to fill out brackets, and ESPN has a competition to do that. I'm no good at that. I'm no good. You have to get so lucky. Granted, this past season I did pretty good in my football picks. I came in tied for second out of about 20 people that I was in that competition with, and I only lost by one game. I was tied with somebody for second. All we had to do is get one more game right, and we would have been tied for first, which would have been pretty cool. And I won it a few years ago. So I'm decent at football, I guess, NFL. But you get to these college basketball games and going through the brackets and everything. I think I've just kind of gotten by that. I think I'm too old for that. I'm 46. I'm into sports. Give me baseball. I'm not into hockey, but if the Penguins play well, they get a couple tiers into the playoffs, they win a couple series in the tournament, I will watch it eventually. I'll watch it eventually. But I watch golf. I've been watching a lot of disc golf. They've been doing a lot of live streaming. I think that's excellent what disc golf is doing. I'll watch that anytime I can if I'm at home. I'll put that. They do that on YouTube. I'll do that. But March Madness, I can remember getting so crazy to watch all these games. Just not into it anymore. It's kind of like NASCAR. I just don't watch anymore. Once Mark Martin retired, I just kind of moved on. I found other things to do, like this show. So let's get right to it. I'm going to start with John McCain and Rand Paul. I don't know that I've ever combined them in a story, but I have to, being that they seem to have a little bit of a fight going on now. They were debating whether the country of Montenegro, which is right on the border with Russia, should be admitted to NATO. John McCain is in favor of it, and Rand Paul is not in favor of it. But John McCain on the Senate floor has gone to the extent of saying that Rand Paul is doing Vladimir Putin's bidding by blocking Montenegro's entrance into NATO, even maybe inferring that Rand Paul is somehow connected to the Russians in some way, which seems pretty funny. I think of any politician who's currently a politician It's actually Donald Trump who seems to be the closest to the Russians. And I don't even think that had anything to do with the election. Do I think that he's too friendly with the administration, a little too friendly with the Russians, has said some things that are a little too kindly of the Russians? Yes. Do I think there's some conspiracy going on? No. But I simply don't like the nice things that have been said about Vladimir Putin and Russia and how he's a great leader. I don't care for that. But Rand Paul, to my knowledge, has never said anything very flattering. Surely not as flattering as what Donald Trump has said about Vladimir Putin. So, John McCain, once again, kind of being the guy that he's always been. I really don't know. I'm never going to meet him. Don't care to meet him. I have no idea. I've never been that impressed with him. I admit, I voted for him for president in 2008. And if I could go back in a DeLorean and change my vote, I would. I'd do what I did this year, or last year, November 6th of 2016, and simply not vote for anybody or write myself in or something like that. I wouldn't vote for him. That was a mistake. I've talked about that. I've owned up to that during the show, I think, in the last year. He's been the Gang of Five, the Gang of Seven, the Gang of 12. If there's any gangs that are created in the United States Senate, John McCain is usually in the gang, which should always, I mean, he is the most consistent member, him and Lindsey Graham. Those two are like peas in a pod. You'd think that they have some very secret romantic relationship going on. But I can guarantee you, if there's some gang of 100 or gang of 3.14, John McCain's going to be a part of it. And it's something that has driven conservatives nuts for years. And why? He's really not conservative. He's a protector of the military and everything else, but he's not conservative. If it was up to John McCain, the military budget would get bigger every year, and that's fine. But so would every entitlement and everything else that exists in government. I mean, he's been there. He's if you don't know, he's the guy who took over Barry Goldwater's seat in Arizona. And since then, he's not a small government guy. He's just not. So him arguing with Rand Paul is something, because Rand Paul is like the opposite. And probably ideologically, I'm closer to Rand Paul than John McCain, even though I think some of the things that Rand Paul says are nutty too. But this is crazy for John McCain to get into this rhetoric and just totally overhype the point that Rand Paul is trying to make. And actually, if you read what Rand Paul's has said and his attitude toward Montenegro, you know what? It kind of makes sense. And I'll give you a perfect example from another country. And I'm not even sure that people even realize this. In fact, I will admit that I did not even know this to within the last year, because it's not like I can name every NATO country off the top of my head. I can't. I'll admit it. Do you know that Sweden is not part of NATO? It's kind of stunning, isn't it? Sweden is a country that pretty much has been an ally of the United States. It certainly helped the United States and NATO countries during the Cold War, the 1950s, 60s, 70s. And if you want to read some really interesting accounts of Russia and the Soviet Union invading Sweden and the Swedes going after them, submarines coming into their bays and their ports and things. Some very interesting stories. You should really look that up. Very interesting. But Sweden is not in NATO. I'm sure if some world war broke out, World War III, Sweden would be on our side. I don't have too many doubts. I may have other criticisms about Sweden and the way they run their country. And of course, there's been those stories out there about the rape statistics in Sweden. But I think that if a huge war broke out along whatever lines, Sweden and the United States and England, or the Great Britain, United Kingdom, whatever you want to call it, and France and Germany, Australia, and some of these other countries in Japan, I think that they would all be on the same side, even though Sweden is not a part of NATO. Now, why isn't it? Is it because the United States and these other countries don't want Sweden in there? No, it's not. In fact, I'm sure if Sweden tomorrow said, you know what, would like to be a part of NATO, it would probably have no, they would have probably no problems getting in. No problem. They buy their military hardware from the West. You look at their jets, they make their own military equipment, but they buy their military equipment from the West. They've done training with the NATO forces in the past. It's not like they're strangers. They're just not a part of it. The reason that they've never wanted to be part of NATO is because they thought if they became part of NATO and being so close to the Soviet Union or to Russia, that's funny, to Russia, that that might provoke Russia a little too much, even in these days since the Soviet Union disbanded. Sweden knows that if something would break out, they know that the United States and these other countries would come to its defense if Sweden couldn't defend itself. They've managed, that country has managed to walk that fine line by being friendly with the West, but not ticking off the Russians. Because once again, they thought, going back to the Cold War years, that if they were part of NATO, that it might just be a little too much for Russia to take, having a NATO country that is so close to its borders. So there's that. This is what goes through my mind when I start thinking about Montenegro, although it's kind of the opposite. Now, what Rand Paul is saying is saying twofold. First, Montenegro cannot help NATO in any significant way. Montenegro is a very, very, very small country. And of course, the reason it even pops into my mind, if you've seen the movie, the James Bond movie Casino Royale, that card game that takes place in the second half of the movie takes place in the country of Montenegro, if you don't know. I don't know if it was actually filmed there. I mean, where it was filmed in the movie, the terrain, the environment, the landscape looks beautiful. I don't know if that was actually Montenegro, though. But that's where it's supposed to take place. That's the setting for the movie, that part of it. But Rand Paul says, first of all, it's such a small country, it doesn't know what Montenegro can really add to NATO and what NATO is trying to do. He's not saying that the United States isn't friends with Montenegro. He's not saying that we wouldn't want to help Montenegro. But he's also saying that Montenegro already has problems with the Russians. They're messing around in there and you know what Russia's been doing recently. You just have to look at the news, them flying jets close to aircraft carriers and flying into British space. And I mean, there's several stories going back quite a few years regarding all of this. Well, they've been doing this in Montenegro. It hasn't gotten as bad as what Russia did in Crimea, however you say that, with Ukraine. But, you know, one of the policies of NATO is that an attack against one country is an attack against all countries, and that all countries are beholden to defending that one country. And Rand Paul worries about letting in a country that is already having problems with Russia. I think that that is a valid argument. I'm not going to say that I would, if I was a senator, I would come to Rand Paul's defense, but that is a position that I can at least a little bit respect. First of all, in fact, what it's showing is Montenegro isn't learning the lesson that Sweden seems to be has learned about being close to Russia and walking that fine line between being friends with the West and not provoking Russia and making it nervous. Now, granted, Sweden is a much more powerful country than Montenegro is. But it could be that Montenegro, in its desire to be part of NATO, is only making this worse. Could be. That's something you'd have to look at. In addition, I'm not sure, and this is another, and this is a topic that came up recently on this program a couple months ago, about how to be part of NATO, you have to devote 2% of your GDP to military, to defense, to personnel, to equipment, to training. And as we talked about, very few countries in NATO are already doing that. And Donald Trump has talked about how these countries aren't pulling their weight. There's just four countries that spend over that 2% number, and just one of them happens to be Greece, of all people, mainly because they have their own issues in that part of the world with Turkey and others. So it's in their own best interest to keep their military budget up, even though that country's broke. But most of these other countries, Italy, France, Germany, they don't spend 2% of their GDP on their military. And I said back then, what are you going to do? You know, what are you going to do? So why would NATO then admit another country that probably isn't going to devote 2% of its GDP? I doubt that 2% of its Montenegro's GDP right now is for their military. I doubt it. Maybe. I haven't looked into it. Maybe they've boosted it up because of Russia and what Russia's been doing in the last few years. That's possible. My gut tells me they aren't doing that. And it very well could be that the only reason that Montenegro, I mean, let's put it this way. Since it's been, what, almost, it's been 28 years, 27 years, since the Soviet Union broke apart. Why is Montenegro, after all of these years, now suddenly interested in being a part of NATO? This is the first I've ever read about it, and I read quite a bit of news. And it feels to me like suddenly they're interested because suddenly they now need the United States. I think of like the first scene in The Godfather, where Vito Corleone is telling that guy, you didn't want to be my friend. You know, that guy is there. He wants revenge on these two guys that did something to his daughter. I think maybe did he rape her or disfigured her or some way. And this father wants these two guys killed. And remember that? That guy starts the first Godfather. I came to America. I believe in America. Remember that? And, you know, what Vito Corleone says is, you know, you don't invite me to your daughter's wedding, or, you know, he goes through all these things, and now you ask me to commit murder. Now, eventually, Vito Corleone eventually decides he's going to do something about it, but it's kind of like this. It's like the United States is Vito Corleone, and this guy in that first scene is Montenegro. Suddenly, they didn't want to have anything to do with us for a long time, and now they need us. It kind of feels like that. And I'm sure Rand Paul, that's going through his mind as well. Is this a precedent you also want to start? That these countries that haven't wanted to be part of NATO resisted it for whatever reason, and now suddenly they want to be a part of it because they're being threatened, even though they may not meet some of the criteria to get into NATO. It's hard. It's, you know, this is what makes foreign policy so tough. It's not easy. These things are not easy to understand. And I'm not sure that your average citizen in the United States, and this is nothing against them, and even myself, I'm not sure I can totally appreciate all of the hoops you have to jump through to deal with things like that. Everything is so touchy. Any word said the wrong way can go in the wrong direction. And it's certainly more volatile. Foreign policy is certainly more volatile than domestic policy. As we've learned, it seems the American people will, their desires and wants and everything seems to waver from maybe not day to day, but maybe month to month. And what somebody says this month that is hated, next month could be loved. It's not as volatile. Yes, it matters. The economy matters to elections and everything. But seldom does one word set off a chain of dominoes that can't be stopped. On foreign policy, it's kind of the opposite.
In France,
an email sent to the wrong person, everything, can set something off. In Montenegro, this issue seems like one of those issues. I think maybe, to go further into this, it may be that Montenegro is looking at Donald Trump, and they're probably paying attention to what he said, and they probably know what he said about how NATO, some of these other countries aren't pulling their weight. Maybe Montenegro says, hey, maybe we can get in on the cheap. If NATO's hurting right now and he's a little disgusted with some of these countries that are already in there, maybe the United States would be happy if we got involved. Could be that. That could be a little bit part of it as well. As long as we promise we're going to get our budget up, our defense budget up to 2% of GDP, I mean, what can the GDP of Montenegro be? Not very much. I would bet that the GDP of New York, the state of New York, is higher than Montenegro. I would guess. So what? How much? I mean, let's just put it this way: in a fight between Russia and Montenegro, Montenegro is going to lose. But also, Montenegro may be wondering if they do get into trouble, whether the United States is going to come to its defense, just like the United States didn't come to its. To Ukraine's defense. Remember that. So it's all very complicated, but surely it's not worth John McCain saying all of those things about Rand Paul. That's crazy. If John McCain wants to disagree with Rand Paul's position, I understand that. It's a very complex situation. All right. I think with John McCain's attitude is that Montenegro should be allowed in. They're fighting. They're not friends with the Russians. They deserve our help. And I guess in a way that he's right. But disputing that, disagreeing with that like Rand Paul and having some structured arguments surely does not make Rand Paul an agent of the Russians. Surely does not. I'm not saying I want Russia to roll through Montenegro. I don't think the world needs that. Although I will say that I think that the United States, this administration, and the past administration have gotten a little too comfortable with the idea that Russia went into Ukraine, took part of it away. That is wrong. That is wrong. That should still be an outrage to this day. And then on top of that, that passenger jet that got shot down. It's upsetting that that has become, to use a 21st century term, the new normal. That, well, Crimea, just part of Russia now. Just boop, just like that. And that's no good either. And maybe John McCain's thinking about that. I think they both think, have interesting arguments. But Rand Paul is not an agent for the Russians, although I will agree, but it doesn't even have anything to do with this particular topic. Rand Paul, in fighting back against John McCain, says that John McCain is, you know, past his prime and he's unhinged. Now, I definitely agree with that, but I don't even need to talk about this particular story to know that. I think John McCain is 80? Is he 80? Is he older than my dad is 80 years old? He's right around there. He doesn't have somewhere to retire to. And he just got reelected. Remember, there was the Republican Party was thinking that this there was a woman, I forget her name, that was going to be able to primary him. She didn't even come close to doing it. And then, even though John McCain has not been any friend, I guess, of Donald Trump, John McCain ended up winning Arizona, his Senate seat again. So he's there for 6 years. I think he has been unhinged at times. Can he not go into retirement? He's not going to do it now. He just got reelected. But maybe that's also what Rand Paul is thinking. Because it does seem, my perception of the Senate is that the old timers are those ones who are more likely to get into the gang of 8, the gang of 11, the gang of 13, the gang of 21.5. And the younger members are not. I'm not saying that won't happen eventually, and it varies. But Rand Paul, Marco Rubio, Joni Ernst, Ted Cruz, the guy from South Carolina, Tim, forget his last name, unfortunately. Those guys, even though and women, I may not agree with all the time, but they are surely more consistent and ideologically sound than John McCain is. And I respect, I guess I have to always preface this, and I totally respect John McCain and his service to the United States. It's totally. And, the time that he spent in the Hanoi Hilton for 5 years, and I don't think the American people will ever truly know what he had to go through. I think that John McCain doesn't like talking about it too much, and I think he really tries to cover up some of those injuries. But if you read online, you can find out that, he needs help put his clothes on, and that's been going on not just because he's 80 or whatever he is, but that's been going on for decades because of the injuries he suffered in the Hanoi Hilton. Never talks about it, and he doesn't try to play up his military service, unlike what John Kerry did. I totally respect that from him. But as a politician, I have always had deep concerns about him. Just have. And so they continue into this story, although I will say that I'm not saying he's necessarily wrong. Where he's way wrong is what he's saying about Rand Paul. But the NATO issue of what country should be in, what country should be out, is unbelievably a very interesting. I think the Sweden example that I talked about is very interesting. I think even if you just want to do the superficial research and reading at Wikipedia about that country and the relationship that it's had with the Russians and before that the Soviet Union, and if you want to get more into depth about it, there are several websites where you can do that, the more of the particulars. It's very interesting. And then by reading that, you'll think that Sweden should be a part of NATO, but it isn't. And then, because that seems weird, but then you read the Swedish reasons. For as Americans, it's hard for us to understand. But looking at it from the Swedish point of view, and what they have had to live with, and having a world power not too far away, you begin to understand this. And, maybe the Swedish, what is it, the president, prime minister, maybe he needs to get the Montenegro people on the phone and give them some pointers. And that would clear all of this up. It might make this a little easier on Montenegro, on the United States, on NATO, to figure this all out. I do not want Russia to be overrun by Montenegro. What I really don't want is Montenegro to get in under the deadline to get into NATO, for the simple reason that they think that they're going to be invaded by Russia. This is kind of no different we talk about with healthcare. People who want coverage, and what they do is, now that anybody can be accepted, people don't buy health insurance, and then when they think they're going to need to get something done, they go and get health insurance right before they need to get the operation. That is how insurance companies are going to go out of business. It's also the way that NATO could start to be torn apart. when you just let countries in because they think they're going to be invaded without any buy-in to the whole concept and what they have to do. I think that that's a negative for NATO, and I think that's also what Rand Paul is trying to express in his belief that Montenegro, at this point, should not be a part of NATO. Very, very interesting topic, and we'll continue to follow it. I got to go to the break. You've been listening to America's Conservative Podcast.
The voice of American conservatism, WRS Digital, Red State Talk Radio.
And we are back at America's Conservative Podcast. Let's move on to something else. I see that the Trump administration has come out with its own budget. Now, we know that all budgets get started in the House. It's where all the money is. It's where the purse strings are. It's not like the White House can pass its own budget and expect the rest of the government to follow it. So this budget is more of a suggestion. And I want you to know, I have nothing against any president putting out his or her own budget. But it's just a suggestion. There is no force of law on it. It's not like the Senate and the House have to seriously look at it and make a decision on it. It's just a suggestion. However, I will say with the budget that Trump's White House have put together, Trump and I'm hoping that Trump had at least something to do with this budget. Maybe not. It is a doozy. And in fact, at redstate.com and a couple other places, they've stated that the budget you see coming out of the White House is somewhat unprecedented in the way that it goes after, well, a lot of the things that conservatives don't like. There was something in particular that I'll point out, the EPA. It seems like the EPA is going to lose some of its enforcement ability in this budget. Its budget is being cut back, and there are several, once again, I didn't list all of them, but if you check it out, you'll see, even in the most general of articles, you will find out that this budget is a little different than probably any budget that we've seen at the federal level in a long time. And I want you to know, for the record, I think that's fine. Okay. But I also say it's just a suggestion. It's not like the House and the Senate have to seriously consider it. In fact, I'm sure in the end, the House and the Senate probably won't consider it. But it's a nice starting point, I guess, to use Trump language. This is a negotiation, and this is the starting point. But what is important, and the defense budget, for example, goes up. And there's been a lot of belly aching that how they're going to pay for the wall is coming out of some other places where it seems the money should be spent. It's not all coming out of the IRS or the EPA or OSHA or some department like that. And I read where this budget, if passed unaltered, many federal employees would lose their jobs and a lot of departments would be completely shut down. It sounds like a lot of good stuff. There's no doubt about it. I'm not even going to try to debate that. I don't think it's going to happen, but I have to say that this budget is probably closer to something that would come out of my White House, and is closer to that than anything that has come out in a long time. I can admit that. As I've told you, everything regarding how I'm going to treat Donald Trump is ideological. All right, it is, and whether I think I can trust him or not. Now, the funny part would be if the House and the Senate said, hey, that's a great budget, and passed it and sent it back to the White House, whether the White House would actually sign its own budget. Now, that's something else. That's that would be interesting. I don't know. But after all of those cuts to a lot of departments that we as conservatives like see happen, and I think these are like real cuts. If departments are vanishing, then it's not, when I say a cut, it's not the cut in the rate of growth. This is, well, it was getting $1 million last year, and now this year it's only get $500,000. That's a real cut. The budget still goes up. After all of that, the budget for the federal government is still going to go up. Meaning, if it was $4 trillion last year, on this budget, it still goes up to $4 trillion and $1 this year or next year. So after all of that, it still goes up because all of these other things continue to go up. Why? Because nobody has the courage to cut them. See, this is the problem that the federal government has worked its way into. This is no different, and I think anybody can understand, this is no different than when you get into financial problems in your life. And you realize that there are hardcore expenses that you don't want to touch. For example, maybe you're living in an apartment that probably you can't afford. Let's say the rent is $1,500 a month. And you have your whatever money you're making, you're always behind it. You're making $3,000 a month after taxes, but your expenses are $3,500 after. So you're losing $500 every month. Well, you start saying, well, you know what? Maybe if I start using coupons, maybe if I start carpooling, I can spend less on gas. Maybe I can shop around for a little cheaper insurance. I can do this. I can do that. Maybe I can cut back on my gym membership and everything. Well, at some point, all of that stuff is gone. At some point, I mean, you got to eat, right? I guess you don't need a gym membership, and maybe you can ditch or sell your car and ride the bus and things, but there are just, at some point, you have to eat. You need your electricity. I think this day and age, you can only cut back so much on your cell phone bill, unless you don't want to have a cell phone, you just don't want to have a phone at all. I guess you can do that. But at some point, you have to start looking at the things that are really, really driving your budget. And in most people's lives, it starts with a mortgage or rent. To a lesser extent, if you have a car payment. Right up there now are your healthcare expenses. And you have to start looking at those things. And saying, well, maybe I'm overspending. Maybe I can do this. That's what makes Obamacare such a tough thing, is that it doesn't seem to be a way to get good care at a price that your average person can afford. I think that's what we're seeing, to put Obamacare in a nutshell. But at some point, you can only cut so many coupons, and you have to start looking at these things that make up 75% of your personal budget. What can you do about them? Or you just got to start making more money, but there are only so many hours in a week, and it would be nice to sleep at some point. This is the problem that the federal government has gotten into. When you hear all these departments, as excited as we are, you can be about seeing this budget, the budget still goes up. Why? Because of entitlements. Those things that nobody wants to touch. Nobody wants to touch them. And I'm not sure if this budget includes if Trump Care, Ryan Care is passed or not. If it's part of it, maybe Obamacare is still factored into this budget. I still say if Ryan Care is a part of this budget instead of Obamacare, the budget still goes up. This is the problem, that we're still going to run deficits even with all these cuts. Constitutionally and conservatively, these cuts are good. A lot of things that the federal government shouldn't be involved in. And had these cuts been done 40 years ago, when entitlements weren't as big a part of the pie in the federal government, and we're going back 56 years, in fact, probably before some of these entitlements even started out. But had these cuts been done, say, in the 1950s, some of these, once again, I know some of these departments might not even existed back then, but you know what I'm saying. The budget for the federal government might have actually gone down. Might have been, going back to the 50s, what would have been, $500 billion? Instead of it being $500 billion, it would have been $499 billion. if you made these cuts. But these days, as the entitlements continue to grow and nobody wants to do anything about them, even when you make cuts like this, true cuts, get rid of departments, get rid of employees, federal employees, the budget still goes up, meaning you're still going to run deficits. Because there is no tax system in the history of mankind that is going to be able to fix all of this. At some point, you have to look at your spending. And for your average person on the street, they realize this. But most people don't realize it. Well, who's the guy that does that popular radio show about personal finances? I can't think of his name. But, you know, he talks about what's his thing. It's not about necessarily making more money. He goes through expenses with people and says, you know what, you know, when he works with them one-on-one, you got to get rid of this. You got to get rid of that. You got to sell this car. You got to do this. Things that people don't want to do on their own because it hurts too much. And this is why I continue to say that the only way that this federal government is ever going to wise up is when checks start to bounce. The problem is that the federal government is the person who administers the program, so it doesn't want the checks to bounce, so it keeps printing money. You know, I mean, conceivably, and this is the problem if we're getting back to NATO in the first part of the show, the problem that European countries have and the reason that they spend so little on the military, yes, partly it's because of us and we've spoiled them. It's also because their entitlement programs have eaten up so much of their budget. People want their stuff more than they want tanks, planes, and bullets and guns. As much as they say they love the military and everything, nobody is going to give up a Social Security check in the United States so that check can go to the military. Nobody's going to do that. That's why, even though I know I'm way out of step with conservatives on this, is that in that way, the respecting of the military in the United States is a little shallow to me. People love it as long as they continue to get their checks. You tell those people, well, you know what? You don't need this check. You're very well off. Your net worth is $1 million, $2 million. You have very few expenses and everything else. We're going to take the Social Security check and give it to this military family over here. The person says, what? You're going to do what? That's what's going on in the United States, and not enough people talk about it, but you'll hear about it here. So no matter this budget or not, we have a spending problem in the United States, and it has to do with things that people don't want to touch. When we want to touch them, and we want to rip the Band-Aid off and get control of this stuff, the United States will then be on its way to financial health. Anything else than that, and then we're just going the same direction. It can't go on forever. Can't. So this budget, I don't mean to bring you down on it. You probably saw it. And maybe even you conservatives out there who didn't vote for Donald Trump, but you're hoping he does the right thing, and you see this budget, and you say, oh, finally. Something to be happy about. Something I can give this guy a little credit on. I was getting a little worried there. The big picture is the spending overall. The federal government, no matter what the program is, spends too much money. So as much as you hear politicians saying about cutting this and cutting that, you very seldom hear them say the federal government overall spends too much money, even though it's the truth. So not to bring you down, but after all of that, as long as the budget's going up, I'm not sure these cuts mean anything. Just being honest. Let's move on to something else. Midterms. And this is something that I've talked about, not recently, but with my buddy Dave, about 2018. And because a lot of the talk after the election was, well, you know, the midterm environment in 2018 looks very favorable to the Republicans. They have senators running in states that are heavily red states where Donald Trump did very well, and they will probably even expand their majorities in the House and the Senate. And I'm saying, that's 2 years from now. That's forever. Forever. Remember, when they had the midterm elections in 2014, nobody on top of nobody could have predicted that Donald Trump was going to run for president. Nobody. In fact, I'm not even sure he knew he was going to do it at that time. But here we are. And you want to start saying that an election is going to be won by a particular guy and a particular party less than 2 years from now? I'm not buying into any of that. And the reason this is coming up is because of all of this discussion that's been going on with Ryan Care, Trump Care. I keep calling it that. I'm just going to call it Trump Care. With Trump Care. In that it doesn't seem like anybody is too happy about it. And in fact, I saw if you want to go by polls, and I know Donald Trump goes by polls, at least the polls that he believes, the ones that make him look good, that overall the impression of Donald Trump right now has been, as far as the economy goes, has been a little positive. You know why that is? Because the Dow Jones is going through the roof. It's like 21,000 or something now. It's like a crazy number. I don't know if it's real. I don't know if it's fake. But everybody's sure 401k is sure benefiting from it. That's why people are saying the economy is doing well. They're looking that they're saving. They're looking at their investments and they're going up. That's why. They're not looking at the unemployment number. They're not looking at jobs created. They're not, and suddenly they're not concerned about jobs going to China and Mexico and Japan and everything else. They're looking at their 401ks and IRAs and everything and saying, wow, look at that. And everybody's happy. This is, once again, the big fallacy that politicians run into. If they could just figure out that they wouldn't have to talk about jobs creation as long as they could make the market go through the roof, everything would be fine. You know, it's funny how people will say the economy sucks and everything else, but as soon as everybody's 401ks and everything go up 25%, everything's great. And that's why Donald Trump's getting that number. But on health care, his approval number is at 35%. 35%. And the problem, as I've seen so far, is that you have Republicans coming down. There's essentially now three groups. It's not two groups. Well, it is two groups, but it's really three groups. I'll explain what I mean. There are people who are in favor of the bill. And that would be Paul Ryan and a lot of people, representatives in the House. Some of the Republican senators in the Senate and Donald Trump. Those are the people who are in favor of it. Now, unfortunately, among the people who are opposed to it, they break into two groups. There are people like myself who think that it doesn't go far enough. I think that Ted Cruz was out giving a speech and said that that bill will be dead as soon as it hits the Senate. We know what Rand Paul has said about it. I am in that camp. But then there are the other Republicans who are saying that we can't pass this bill because, for the exact opposite reason, that people are going to lose coverage, and of course those would be the more moderate Republicans, the what I might call the wimpy ones. So given all of that, you have three distinct factions, really two groups, but then within one group there's two groups. You start talking about midterm elections, and I start getting a little nervous. Not that I even care whether Republicans win or not, because I'm not a part of the party anymore. And I probably am not going back if I live to be 90 years old. So you start talking about midterm elections, and I start thinking about all this stuff, and it seems to me that Democrats are going to have some wide openings out there. No matter where, what state, what district is in play and is supposed to be close. Can't count your eggs before they've hatched. And I think that that's what Republicans have been doing too early. I mean, they were doing that before Donald Trump was even inaugurated. Remember back in 2008, all that talk about, well, Barack Obama won so easily. Democrats are going to hold the White House and the Senate and the House, the Senate and the White House for decades. That belief was shattered in 2 years. The House went, and then it was shattered 4 years later in 2014 with the Senate. And then 6 years after 2010, it was shattered in the White House. It's crazy. It's crazy. And I think, I mean, maybe I'm just a little biased here. I think that that low approval number regarding the health care, regarding Donald Trump, is because he has embraced something and the House has embraced something that isn't what they promised. Now, I guess Paul Ryan, I read this quote out there. He's saying we wrote the bill that we campaigned on. Huh. Wow. I don't think so. Do any of you think so? When you heard last summer Donald Trump talking about better health care and you heard Paul Ryan and all these guys talk about repeal and replace, is this the bill that you imagined? Be honest. I'm sure your answer for most of you is going to be no. Then you tell me how Paul Ryan could say that. Now keep in mind, he doesn't have to say that, but he said it. In fact, I read somewhere where somebody wrote that the 2011 Paul Ryan wouldn't vote for the bill that the 2017 Paul Ryan wrote or is responsible for. That is a true statement. I just wonder if he was being genuine back then in 2011 or he was being genuine now. To me, as you have already guessed, I believe that you have to keep campaign promises even if they don't get passed. If you're going to say that you're going to repeal and replace Obamacare, then that's what you should do. And it should be now, if it doesn't go through because of the Democrats, because of filibustering, because of cloture, because of whatever crazy word is out there, I can live with that. I can live with that. Unfortunately, I think that, and we've talked about this before, unfortunately, too often, I think the Congress gets in the idea they're like in the manufacturing business. They think they're Ford Motor Company, where they got to turn out cars every day, where Ford turns out cars every day. You know why? Because they're in the car business. Congress is not in the law production business. In fact, there's nothing that says that Congress ever has to write a law ever for the rest of time. All of them could just sit there in the chambers and play cards, everything for the rest of time. There's nothing that says that. Now, granted, they will be judged on that every 2 years or 6 years. But when I see something like this, I start thinking, well, he did this just because something needs to be done, something that he thinks can pass. Well, it's not important if it passes or not. It only matters if you keep your promise or not. I understand as a conservative, liberals are going to try to stop that at every turn. They're going to do that. That's what they do. Just like Republicans try to stop things that Democrats do. That's just the way it goes. But there is a nobleness. Yeah. There is some morality in trying to do something that's right, even if you know it's not going to work. At least you say you can tried it, and tried it as hard as you could. In this case, unlike what Yoda said, trying does matter. But you get the feeling with Trump Care and this bill that was written that we now know about is that it's something else. That this is a way to get something through just to say they did something. And I'm not so sure that's going to fly. I really have my doubts about it. And I don't even need to look at a poll to know that. The president, Donald Trump, and the House and the Senate, they created these expectations. These are not, fantasy expectations that people have in their heads. They're only going by what these men and women said. Now they're not doing it. And somebody's going to have to pay for that. But I got to go. You can email me, edwarddenslereagan.com. Find the show Monday through Friday, 9 p.m. Eastern on redstatetalkradio.com. My other program, Unfound, new episode tomorrow. Find it on Podomatic and iTunes. Please share, subscribe, review. Been doing really well over there. Find me, this show, on Twitter, USA Podcast. The other one, Unfound Podcast on Twitter. I gotta go. You've been listening to America's Conservative Podcast.